Hello and good evening. Welcome to another episode of Between the Presets, a podcast by me, Rudy Stettner, that comes out every Monday evening. Here is the place where anything that can be said in polite company is fair game for discussion, even if it occasionally offends. Let's roll. Please be advised that this episode of Between the Presets contains material that may be unsuitable for younger audiences. If that is an issue, please listen at another time or on headphones. Thank you. Hello, it is Monday night, the 1st of Nisan, 5784, that being the 8th of April, 2024. Although today there was much talk of the solar eclipse, I was busy driving to and from a doctor's appointment, which precluded my focusing on it. I will probably look at a video on YouTube of the solar eclipse as viewed in the region of totality where I was not. I was very much engaged visually with the budding new leaves and flowers that come out in early springtime. It is absolutely beautiful. I think its value as a metaphor is not to be understated. The idea that a branch can be barren and not have any leaves on it at all. And then every year it springs to life. The leaves going from light yellowish green to full resonant green to almost the color of olives, green olives. But what I found so interesting about the solar eclipse was our ability, we as a human species, our ability to predict such events hundreds of years in advance, our ability to discern and chart patterns in the motion of the planets, the growth of human beings and plants, and even microscopic organisms. It's a wonderful thing, and I view the expansion of human knowledge to be ultimately a tribute to our Creator for having created such a potentially magnificent creature. As humans and also many of the other creatures we share our planet with. And I refer to human beings as potentially magnificent because we can take our amazing array of abilities in a good direction or something quite the opposite. One of my recurring themes in my personal life is the manner in which language shapes my thought. Am I allowing my choice of language to limit my understanding of my daily life? It's very common to say, I'm angry, I'm happy, I'm sad, whatever the emotion might be. In speaking with other people, I share that use of the English language. Although I prefer to say, I feel happy, I feel sad, I feel angry, or more accurately to say, I feel happiness, but that sounds a little weird, or I feel anger. But there's an image that goes through my head, and that is of a copper wire. Like a plug to a radio, a plug to an electronic appliance that plugs into the wall. I think these days there still made out of copper. And when one plugs an electrical cord into the wall, that piece of wire behind rubber insulation is conducting 110 volts here in the United States, 220 volts abroad. And if you look at some of the wires that are buried underneath the street, it can go up to like 600 volts. But if you unplug the plug or disconnect the cable under the street or whatever, the electricity stops flowing. Whether it's plugged in or not, that wire is copper. It can be copper conducting electricity, or it can be copper just sitting there. The wire can power a radio or a television, or it can be delivering a nasty destructive shock. And in a metaphorical manner of speaking, I like to view myself sometimes as being like that piece of copper wire. I am not my emotions. I am experiencing my emotions. If I'm feeling negativity, where everybody I think of, I'm annoyed with them, angry, feel anger towards them, maybe it's time to reconfigure, to pull the plug on those emotions. And looking at the other end of the copper wire metaphor, what are my emotions powering? You look at what electricity can do. It can play beautiful music on the radio, a hopefully uplifting television program, toast bread, boil water. I find that metaphor of the copper wire to be a very compelling one for choosing judiciously my what emotions and thoughts I connect myself to and who I connect myself to. I really enjoy contemplating the commonplace objects and phenomena around me and reflecting upon what lessons they have for me. On a trivial and decidedly non-philosophical note, one thing I learned from my mother when I was little, she told me that silver is actually a better conductor of heat of electricity than is copper. When I get a bowl of soup, I like it to be at something a little bit above room temperature, but not too much. I do not like hot soup. So she told me, here is a silver spoon. Silver spoon. Stick that in the soup and you'll notice it'll get very hot. It'll conduct the heat in the soup and take it away and cool down the liquid eventually. Only problem was I could not pick up the spoon for several minutes. Now, why do we not use silver wires in our appliances, in our homes, in our walls? The answer is pretty obvious, that we have a bad enough time with people stealing copper from homes and buildings. I've seen it with my own eyes. If they ever started using silver wires, aside from the expense, the city would be in darkness because the scrap thieves would take it all away. I had an interesting synagogue experience. I go to synagogues in different parts of New York City due to my work and personal schedule. There's one synagogue I go to in Flatbush where they say there's a prayer called Avinu Malkeinu, Our Father, Our King, which is said in normal times on Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, and public fast days. Some congregations have taken, since October 7th, have taken to saying this prayer daily. And I mentioned to one of the congregants in the shul that I found that, you know, an admirable practice. And he looked at me like, you know, a bit strangely, like, doesn't everybody do that? This is, you know, what we've been doing since October 7th. Then there's another prayer called Tachnun, a part of the daily prayers in the morning and afternoon. It's basically to put it into plain English, a collective confession of sins and a collective petition for God's mercy and guidance. Some days it is not said. So someone told me that from the 23rd of the month of Adar until the month of Iyar, which is like a little bit after Passover ends, nobody says Tachnun. So I asked you, is that a custom followed by all Jews? And he said, absolutely. So this week I went out of town, went into synagogue Sunday morning, and sure enough, they were definitely saying Tachnun loud and clear. But I thought that was a little interesting. The structure of Jewish prayer is such that it's recognizable from one place to another, even if there are marked differences. But that we don't always know what the other guys and other shuls are doing, and it was just a little interesting to me. One thing I always look at, sort of as a indicator of economic health, is how is the price of gas? That's a very important statistic because a lot of our food and other commodities come by truck or by plane. Otherwise, it one way or another, the price of gas at the pump works its way into the price of everything else. Gas is going up. Packages are shrinking. If we look at the statistics that the government points out, things are doing better than ever. There are two sayings that describe this discrepancy between what the government says and what we see. One is that there are three kinds of lies. Lies, damn lies, and statistics. And the other one, when you hear that inflation is down, you say, what are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? I've heard more advertisements lately for survival foods that can last 25 years. I really hope that any crisis that is in store for us, that we don't have to, we aren't cut off from the food supply for 25 years. I think canned food lasts a good long time. But hey, you never know. One of my early memories was back in, I think it was 1961. It was the Cuban Missile Crisis. And people were seriously worried in a grassroots level that there was going to be a nuclear war that would end life as we know it and perhaps end our lives as well. But I remember my father going to the local hardware store, picking up bags and bags of sand, cement, cinder blocks, and spending an entire weekend hauling these cinder blocks into the basement. I was a little kid, so I hauled the half cinder blocks. Everybody else was carrying the big ones. My mother got a fierce backache from doing her part. And over the course of the weekend, we built the fallout shelter in that basement. There was a wooden door. It was, you kind of had to turn a corner. It was definitely not a sealed vault, although the windows were sealed. We brought gallon bottles of water down there, canned foods, blankets. Years later, I used to enjoy reading old news stories from the early 1960s because we had newspapers down there. I don't know what survivalist purpose they served. What was interesting about this fallout shelter is that although it would have provided some protection in the event of that the house would have been destroyed by bombing, the protection it would have provided from nuclear radiation would have been non-existent. We had, air raid drills in school. Now, just a little reality check. If a nuclear blast is so close that you see a blinding flash, you're done for. Hiding under the desk isn't going to do much good at all. But one thing that's very important in times of war or civil unrest or whatever is for people to think and feel that what they do actually makes a difference. That even though a fallout shelter might be of limited usefulness, not totally useless, but limited, even though getting under your desk and putting your face down and your hands behind your head or whatever might be of even less utility, it still gives you the feeling that you're not completely powerless. In a follow-up, my father ended up turning the fallout shelter into a darkroom where he developed some very nice photographs. I remember in terms of air raid shelters, which are absolutely needed in time of war, I heard a story from World War II that this was told from the point of view of a Jewish guy who managed to survive World War II in a large German city. And he was not allowed in his local bomb shelter. Jews were not welcome. So what happened was he hid in his apartment building basement and hoped and prayed for the best. And when he came out, it turned out that the air raid shelter in which most of his neighbors had taken shelter had scored a direct hit. And the people who were in the air raid shelter were killed to the last man, woman, and child by shockwaves. The shockwaves from the bomb blast just killed everybody in the shelter, scrambled their insides. And this guy who was telling the story, we don't appreciate this adequately. He had a human connection to his neighbors. With some of them, he was still friendly, and In any case, he felt for them. He felt for their well-being, for their joys and their sorrows. And when he described dead children being brought out of that air raid shelter in his city, years later, this Jewish man broke down in tears. And it was, to me, a very vivid reminder that even in the worst of times, we as human beings, as Jews, remain a part of the social fabric. I was very much touched not only by the story itself, which this man told, but his heartfelt reaction to what was going on around him. We're living in very interesting times, which is not always a good thing. Sometimes I prefer boring times, but 2024 is a very important election year. How people vote shapes our lives. And I hope and pray that the Almighty guides the American people as it faces one of the most important elections of our lifetime. And I hope and pray that Israel will remain strong, not only against its sworn and avowed enemies, such as Hamas and Iran, but that Israel should be strong in resisting pressure from its ostensible friends, who are basically want to tie its hands as it defends itself. And in any case, the individual strivings we have to be better human beings, better neighbors, better family members, is inextricably linked to the struggle to build better political systems, elect better leaders, etc. Because even the best conceived political system can only operate if it's the individuals participating in it are upright and decent individuals. Just a little disclaimer. I realized when I talked about moral human beings as being upright that some animal rights activists might take offense to that, since human beings walk upright on two legs and animals walk on all fours. And we don't want to discriminate against the four-legged creatures with whom we share planet Earth. Lest you fear that I am submitting to political correctness, I will not apologize for using the phrase upright. If any animal rights activists contact me and tell me that this is anthropocentric and discriminates against animals, then, well, tough noogies. So I wish you all a good week on that light note, and may we all be blessed with good things. It's been good speaking with you all yet again. This wraps up another weekly episode of Between the Presets. I thank you all for the pleasure of sharing with me my weekly muse. Whatever platform you access, hitting like, subscribe, or leaving a comment is much appreciated. My email address is thewinterriders@gmail.com. thewinterriders@gmail.com. Until next week, adio, which in some African languages means born on Monday or be righteous, and closely resembles adios in Spanish.